All right, effective communication. We are in the tools. We're looking at various tools that you have available to you as you try to communicate. And we're going to look at the tool of repetition. Repetition. Psalm 136 has many things in it, but this phrase happens over and over again. His love endures forever. Then there's something else. His love endures forever. Originally, there would be someone shouting out the other part, and then the whole crowd would be responding with, "His love endures forever." In fact, this phrase is used 36 times in this one chapter alone. Repetition over many communications. Okay, there's two different kinds of repetition. We're going to talk about this one first. Repetition over many communications. In other words, you say something and then later on you come back and say it again. Maybe the next day or a week later or a year later, but you say it in multiple occasions. Why do this? The average customer has to hear something at least 7 times before they're ready to buy. So that's why commercials on television or even on the internet, they keep hitting you with the exact same message over and over and over again, because they know you have to hear it at least 7 times before you even think about doing what they want you to do. The average churchgoer will not remember that the pastor preached a particular sermon 1 year later. And I remember when I first discovered this, I preached a sermon on loneliness. You know, why we get lonely, what the Bible says about that, and sort of what is the hope in the loneliness situation. It was a really good sermon, I thought. Okay? So I preached it 1 year. And then the next year, I had this busy week, and I had a funeral, and a few other things happened, and I didn't have time to make, and at that time, I was preaching 2 sermons every week. I didn't have time to do one of them. So I went back into what I'd already done, and I was a new preacher, so I didn't have a lot, okay? That was my first year. I looked back at that previous year, and I thought, this was a good one. People really responded well to it. I'm going to preach it again. So I preached the exact same sermon. I mean, most of it was written out, and I followed it. I did it exactly like I did the first time. And I remember somebody that, you know, that liked me, he came up to me and he said, "That was the best sermon you've ever done." And I thought, well, this is exactly the exact sermon I did last year, so how can this be the best sermon? And if it's the best sermon, why didn't you remember that I did it last year? So people need to hear things many times. Now for you, you wrote it, you spend a lot of time putting it together and delivering it, you have a stronger connection to it, so you perhaps remember, but the average person doesn't remember. I thought the first time I explained the difference between a Pharisee and a Sadducee. You know, I need to explain this because of this passage that they're mentioned here, and I need to explain this to my congregation. I thought once I explained it, I would never have to explain it again. But a year later, they still don't remember the difference. Maybe you don't either. All right, the average employee will not remember the company's mission statement. Companies spend a year, they spend countless hours figuring out their mission statement, and most of the employees wouldn't be able to say what it is. And that's true in churches too. The average son or daughter will not remember the parent's wishes or commands. And if you're a parent, then you know this. People need to hear things over and over and over. Repetition over many communications. So, because this is true, because people need to hear it over and over again, what do you need to do? Repeat! 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 You must say things over and over and over again. Many years ago, Henry Reinga and I discovered that getting a walk with God, a daily walk where you're reading the Bible and prayer, that these are the things you need to do. We thought, that, oh, this is what we have to get our churches to do. And we thought, Well, you just tell them and we're done. But we discovered that you have to make it the focus of your church. You have to keep talking about it. You need other things that do it, and encouragements and reinforcements. And you have to, at your small groups, talk about it. At the service, you talk about it. When you meet together for any reason, you have to talk about it. This has to be the center point of your church, or it's not going to happen. Repetition, 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 repetition. All right, so that's repetition over many communications. What about repetition within one communication? So this is one talk, and I'm going to say something or use a word over and over again. The example I want to use is Martin Luther King Jr. He had a speech in Washington, D.C. This is back in the 60s, and it's called the I Have a Dream speech. And I want you to watch this.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with this faith.
All right, that was powerful, wasn't it? And it was powerful. In fact, if you saw the whole speech, most of the speech was written out. And he's looking down, and he'll say a phrase, and he looks up, and he says a phrase. But when he gets to this section, in fact, this whole section was not written in his speech. But when he gets to this section, all of a sudden, he's looking at the people, and he's talking. And he sort of said, I have a dream in the beginning. And then he kept going with that. And at first, it was just something that he said that fit with what he was talking about. And then he said it again. And then he said it again. And you can tell from watching this that it kept building. That just the phrase itself carried the weight of everything else that he had said in, previously. And that's what repetition can do. It first doesn't mean a lot, but as it gets repeated, it carries more and more and more emotional weight. So you can do this in your speeches too. In fact, I want to give you some ideas from the Bible, words that you can repeat that sort of can build in the same way. The first phrase is, God will provide. If you look at the story of Abraham and Isaac, the whole Isaac scenario is about God providing. First of all, providing Abraham and Sarah with a son. They couldn't have a son. God made this promise to Abraham and Sarah. And God comes to Abraham and says, you will have a son. And Abraham says, well, I have one, Ishmael. No, you will have one with your wife, Sarah. And he laughs. He doesn't believe it. And then God comes again and he says the same thing to Abraham in the form of some angels. And Sarah is listening this time and she laughs. You will have a son. God is coming to Abraham and saying, I will provide. You know, and Abraham's saying, I'm 100 years old. My wife is 99. How is this going to happen? And in a way, God is saying, I will provide. You don't understand how it can happen, but I will provide. Okay, then the next story, Isaac comes, is born, the son of promise, and then God says to Abraham, I want you to take your son, the son of promise, and I want you to sacrifice him. So he puts the wood on his son, and they go off. They go to Mount Moriah, where Jerusalem is today, where people think the temple was actually built over. And he's to sacrifice his son. And finally, his son is like, okay, Dad, I see that we have the fire. I see we have the wood. But where's the lamb? And Abraham says, God will provide. God will provide. And then the angel stops Abraham from killing his own son as a sacrifice. And God does provide. There's a ram. His horns are caught in the thicket. And so Abraham names the place, God will provide. It comes time for Isaac to find a wife. And Abraham sends his servant to go find a wife for Isaac. And it's a miraculous story. But in the end, God provides. Who is God? God is the one that provides. Maybe your marriage isn't going well. Or maybe you're looking for someone. You're looking for the right spouse and you can't find one. God will provide. Maybe you have a son or a daughter that's wandering away from everything that you've been teaching them. God will provide. Maybe right now your finances are beyond your control or anyone else's and you have no idea how you will ever get it straight. God will provide. Maybe at night you're wondering if you even believe in God anymore and you wish you had stronger faith. And you see other people, they seem to have faith. Good things are happening to them, but not for you. God will provide. See, that phrase is a powerful phrase. You keep building one story after another. In fact, the whole Bible is the story of how God will provide. It doesn't always provide it in the timing that you would like. He doesn't always provide it in the way that you would like, but God will provide because He has a plan for you. It's a great phrase. Another one, the God who sees me. The God who sees me. Remember, Abraham has a son, Ishmael, with the servant girl Hagar. Sarah and Abraham, they're not able to have a child. God made this promise, but the whole promise is dependent on a child. They don't have a child, so they're trying to make it happen. Okay? They're trying to make it happen. God promised this, but we don't see God doing it, so we're going to take things into our own hands and we're going to make it happen. That's what we often do. And that's where God provides this miracle of Isaac to make the point. I will provide. You're not the one that's going to manipulate this into happening. I'm the one that will make it happen. So, Isaac is chosen, and Hagar is taking, Abraham sends Ishmael away because Ishmael and Isaac and Sarah, and they're all fighting. So Abraham sends Ishmael and Hagar away. They go, they run out of water. It looks like they're just going to die. And she leaves her son to die, and then she pleads with God, and then God comes and speaks to Hagar. And when God, he promises that he will take care of them and good things will happen to them. And so Hagar names the place, God will provide. God is the one who sees me. The one who sees me. That's a good phrase. Because there's a lot of times young people, they're going to school, they're doing what they're going to do, and they feel insecure, and they don't feel like they belong to anything. They wonder if they have a future. And then to communicate to them, God is the one who sees you. He sees you in your pain. He sees you when you're hurting. He sees you when you don't have faith. In fact, this phrase is a phrase we used in our church for an entire year. Let's be the church that sees people. There are a lot of people that feel insignificant. A lot of people feel pushed to the side, taken advantage of, wherever they might be in our culture, in their families, in their workplaces, by society itself, in the world itself. Maybe they feel that God doesn't see them. And so if we could be the church that sees people, when people come to our church and they visit our church, there are people that talk to them. If we have a visitor that is standing all by themselves after the church service, then we are not the church that sees people. We're the church that sees ourselves. Let's be the church that sees people. Why? Because God is the God who sees. He sees the hurts, he sees the pains, and he feels these things. See, it's a powerful phrase to keep using over and over again. How about from Ephesians 2? He who began a good work in you will complete it. Okay? What a phrase. He who began a good work in you. So you have a sermon on this, and you keep coming back to it over and over again. You're a young person. You're going to school. You did something good. God has started something in you, and he'll finish it. You have a relationship. You're dating someone. You're engaged. God began something good. He will complete it. You're in a marriage, it's been 10 years, and it's not going so well. There's this friction, there's this fighting. Well, God began something 10 years ago. He will complete it. You're beginning this thing with CLI. You're taking these courses. You hope to get some kind of degree. Maybe you've got a certificate. Maybe you go on to the next thing. And you wonder, where's all this going to go? How's this going to work out? I'm in a church, they don't recognize my talents. They don't know who Christian Leaders Institute is. I'm having a hard time getting some traction. He who began a good work in you will complete it. Has God begun a good work in you? Yes. And if he began a good work in you, he will complete it. See, you can trust that. When? I don't know. How? I don't know. But God will finish what he starts, even in you. How about from Philippians 4? I can do all things through God who gives me strength. All things? Can I finish this class? Yes. Can I finish this task, this job thing that I have at work? Yes. Can I finish the parenting task that I have with my kids, even though it might not be going? Yes. I can do all things. How about the things that I've never been any good at? Yes. With God's help, you can do things that you didn't think that you could do. How about from Philippians 3, press on. Paul says, I press on towards the goal. I forget what's the past. Yeah, I've failed in the past, but one thing I do. I forget the past, and I press on to what God has called me to do. I press on. The church that I'm currently in, I came. It was a church of 300-400 people, and then they had problems, and they kicked their pastor out, and went down to 100 people. And I came when there was 100 grumpy, troubled people. And under my expert leadership, it went down to 50. Okay, so I had planted churches. I had daughtered three churches out of that church. I had done really well everywhere else I went. And I came to this church, and it was going the opposite direction. And I felt like quitting. Felt like, Lord, I don't know, I thought you were with me. I thought that I had some gifts and abilities, and everything I do, everything just is falling apart. I'll tell you what got me through is this verse, pressing on. Are things going well? No, but I'm pressing on. Are people against me? Even though it wasn't my fault, I didn't take their church and destroy it. They did. I press on. Do I see how this is going to work? No, I have no idea how this is going to work. I don't see the future. I don't know how. I still press on. I press on. My wife felt the same way. We could not see anything positive going on, but we pressed on. Press on. I press on to what God has called me to do, whether it succeeds or it doesn't succeed. I'm not doing this because it's succeeding. I'm doing this because God calls me to do it. And whether it succeeds or not, that's God's problem. I press on. All right, so as the church started doing better, I remember we had this banquet, and one of our members at the banquet, he made this, we had sort of an award ceremony for people doing things and volunteering and so on, and he made little plaques, and he actually made a big button, and he called it Press On. And he put the word on the button. So it was clever and it was fun. But the whole church had this sense that we were going to press on. And from that moment on, the church started growing and good things started happening. But it was difficult for at least a year when things are falling apart and everything you do doesn't work. And sometimes you just have to press on. And maybe that's true in your life right now too. Maybe in your marriage, maybe in your family, maybe in your church, maybe in your career. I don't know what it is. Maybe in your faith. You just need to keep pressing on. Mark 9:24 is the story of a father bringing his son. The disciples couldn't heal him. And the son, the father has this conversation with Jesus, and can you help him? And Jesus, well, what do you mean? Of course, I can help him. If anyone who believes, I can help. And the father responds, I believe, but help my unbelief. There's part of me that believes and part of me that doesn't. Well, that's a great phrase to use in a good sermon or a talk. I believe. Help my unbelief. I believe in God. Help my unbelief. I believe that God can take the difficult situation that I am in and turn it around. But God, help my unbelief. I believe that my church can succeed, even if evidence is going against that. God, help my unbelief. It's a great phrase. It's a good phrase for my own life. I'm sure it might be a good one for your life too. I do believe these things, but sometimes I don't live like I believe. I believe in the resurrection. I believe that death is not the final end, that we will be raised, that we'll be in heaven one day, but a lot of times I don't live that way. I get fearful. I'm not as bold as I should be with the people around me about my faith. Why not? Who cares if people mock me or laugh at me or don't listen to me? How can I possibly get embarrassed? How can I fear for my own life and my own safety? I will live forever. So I believe it. Help my unbelief. Help me really believe it and live it. Deuteronomy 31 verse 8, the Lord himself goes before you and he will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. This is the verse that an elder gave to me when I became a pastor many years ago. We had a ceremony, a service. I got ordained. And at the end, the elder came up and he gave me that verse. It was the first time I ever really took notice of that verse. Well, it was a good verse. And I needed that verse. 4 years later, I went off to Vancouver and I planted a church. And after we planted a church and it did well, we had a young man that was going to plant a church outside of our church. He needed to get ordained. So we had our ordination service. I decided, well, I should give him a verse like I got a verse. What verse should I give him? I decided, well, why not Deuteronomy 31, verse 8? The Lord himself goes before you. He will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Off he went to plant a church. 2 years later, we had another young guy who wanted to plant a church out of our church. He needed to get ordained, so I needed a verse. What verse should I use? Well, how about Deuteronomy 31, verse 8? The Lord himself goes before you, and he will be with you. He'll never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. And off he went to plant a church. Then I came to Chicago with Henry. We did some things. I came to Michigan in the church that I'm currently at. I needed some help, so we got this young guy to be an associate pastor. He needed to get ordained, so he needed a verse. Deuteronomy 31, verse 8. The Lord himself goes before you. He will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. I got the verse. I gave the verse. The verse had all the memories of the difficulties that you go through in church, and it's comforting to know that God goes before you in all these situations, and the verse became more and more powerful and more meaningful. Well, the guy who gave me the verse some 30-some years ago got cancer. And my wife and I went to see he and his wife one last time before he died. He knew he wasn't going to be around very long. And we went and visited him. We talked. We laughed about the old days and so on. And finally, when it was time to leave, I knew I'd never see him again on this side, on the earth side. I wouldn't see him till we get to heaven. So this is our parting. And before we left, I looked at him and I said, you know, many years ago, you gave me a verse. And this is what I've done with this verse. And this is what this verse has meant to me. But I want to give this verse back to you. And I looked him in the eye. And I said, because the Lord himself goes before you. And he will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. You see, you start with something and you keep repeating it and repeating it and repeating it, and it picks up memories and it picks up emotions along the way until finally at the end it's heavy. It's heavy with emotion. So, repetition. You want to say things over and over again in multiple presentations, but you can also say the same thing over and over again within a presentation. Try this tool out somewhere along the path today.